walks in a restaurant, he's running, speaks at an event, walks home. The music plays, we know who's here. It's our guy, Tom Hauser. You were just at an event. Did you have the music played before you stood up on stage?
Always. It's when I walk into an office building, it's weird. Something triggers it, and then it just plays on the Muzak and the elevators and the lobby. And you know, yeah. And actually, I'm right next door to where you would ordinarily be. And I just said to Dave, hey, how about if I just walk over? And he goes, well,
yeah.
I don't know that you'll see Chad, but you can walk over. I was at the
I'm in the Western. Yeah, I'm at the Western Suburbs studio today. If I would have known.
I didn't realize it was right next door. I knew this event was coming up. I didn't pay a lot of attention to exactly where it was until today. So,
yeah.
My bad, wow. As they say.
Nice command. Yeah, I mean, you could walk into the studio. It would be great. Yeah, or you could drive out here.
I'm in the ornate lobby of this Capella Tower. This is a great place. Yeah.
It's very nice. They also have, if you go up on the...
It's very nice.
Yeah, you can go up on the second floor, and they have this hoity-toity area for Tribune staff if they want to hang out.
Is that the collaborative? Is that what they call that?
Yes, that would be very collaborative, except not for us, because we don't work at the Tribune, so... I'm not even sure.
I was doing a panel up there.
Yeah. I'm not even sure if we're allowed to look in there. You know, that's how it is. Okay. Let's jump into something we were texting about the other day about timing of stories when we're this close to an election. Clearly, in any election, you're going to see these late stories worked in to influence, right? And John Kelly spoke with Jeffrey Goldberg in The Atlantic, and he spoke with The New York Times, and he's mentioned this once or twice before. He crushed Donald Trump. That's what he did. He mentioned, again, he thinks he fits the definition of a fascist, talked repeatedly how Trump would reference Hitler. I'd like the loyalty of Hitler had with his generals. And I know you're always concerned about the timing of that, and I get it. Let me add another one. That Mitch McConnell, his book is now out, and there's reporting on it where Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, he will not be the majority leader because he's staying in the Senate, but he's stepping down. He did not mince words. He's calling Trump a sleazeball, a narcissist, said the former president is stupid as well as being ill-tempered. This is Mitch McConnell saying this. So I don't think there's any doubt that McConnell, who is also saying, well, we've put some of that off to the side and you know, I'm supporting him. But if these folks are trying to influence, and they are, let's just be honest. Time in McConnell's book, for sure, John Kelly, as a journalist who wants facts, how do you determine how much you should report on a story which has at least some level of veracity to it when it's John Kelly or Mitch McConnell compared to, okay, what are we doing this close to election time?
Well, first, Senator Mitch McConnell does not disavow saying any of those things you just mentioned. However, in the next breath, he endorses Donald Trump.
Yes.
John Kelly clearly not endorsing Donald Trump. But to say that he praised Hitler and that he says he fits the definition of a fascist and said it should be a 911 wake-up call for Americans— where has that 911 call been for the last 4 years when Donald Trump has been running for president? He's been running for president since he won't admit he lost, but since he lost to Joe Biden, he's been running. So, I mean, who waits 4 years when your house is on fire to make a 911 call? And that's the point I'm making about stories like this that are very, very designed, very clearly designed to influence the election. What are we now, 13, 12 days before the election? Yeah. And the headline I'm looking at in the Star Tribune, in the lobby of their building, I might add, Trump praised Hitler, Kelly says. Why was that not a story 2 years ago, 3 years ago, a year ago, 6 months ago? Instead, it's timed less than 2 weeks before the election. That is my point as a journalist. You get pitched a lot of things about a lot of people. I get people pitching me stories about so-and-so doesn't live in this district he's running in, so-and-so doesn't do this. We look into these things, but it's you've got to consider the source, the motivation, and what are they trying to do to influence the election. I understand what the people who are pitching these stories are trying to do. They are trying to influence the election, but do journalists need to bite on every single one of those things?
Well, I mean, all really good points, right? And Kelly has a couple times criticized Trump. But this is a four-star general who is not on CNN as a paid contributor. He didn't write a book. He has been reluctant to speak out. I guess it's possible he thought, again, possible, not guaranteeing this, that he didn't think Trump would get this far. And then maybe he did just decide, you know what? I want to save my powder and I want to be as influential as I can. And I'm thinking I would do that. So that's what I'm saying to you. How do you balance that? Let's say somebody comes out next couple of days and has some really damning information about Kamala Harris. And it's from someone that most people would think is credible. Not everybody. And then you would have to do some reporting on it. How do you then decide 10 days out, 9 days out, 8 days out, and say, oh, I've watched this too many times. If they really wanted to do this, they should have done it sooner. So I'm either going to give it coverage or I'm not going to give it as much coverage as normal. I think that's a tough spot where a good reporter like yourself is in.
Well, it is difficult, but one thing that can make it easier is, do you have this on videotape? Do you have an audio tape? Do you have something other than somebody's notes or somebody's recollection of what someone said? Because people are always going to look at that and go, well, you know, how do we know that he said that? There's clearly a lot of animosity between General Kelly and Donald Trump. And so, you know, none of us, we're all human. None of us are above recriminations and sour grapes and all kinds of things. And I'm not saying that's the case here, but to the news consumer, they have to consider the motivation. And when they say it's a 911 wake-up call for the American people, well, maybe back when he was being nominated for president back in July or August, whenever that convention was, or at any time along the way, you have this on the record. The other thing that the national media in particular runs the risk of, these stories in some ways kind of gin up the base for Donald Trump, because I'm sure you've looked at polls, national polls, about where the American public, what regard they hold journalists in the news media.
Right.
Not very high. We might even be below Congress now. I'm not sure. So when people see these stories, it makes them angry because they all seem to be so one-sided. Now that's what the Trump people are going to say. And maybe it's because he says and does a lot of crazier things than the other side.
Correct.
But
he does.
But people look at it. But so much of that, I find it hard to believe, if you ask any one of your friends, what do you think of Donald Trump, that anything is going to change their opinion of him right now, whether it's pro or con. So it just isn't anything left to know about this guy. And so to throw
Let me just jump in.
There,
couple last points, and then I want to pause. I want to talk Royce White, Amy Klobuchar. Tom Hauser's with us, best in the business. There, you know, obviously the Times, you know this, the Times did release audio of General Kelly saying this. So it adds to the Times part with audio. I agree with you 100%.
But I need Donald Trump saying it, not John Kelly. I know John Kelly said it.
Yeah,
But
right.
An audio,
but we've had a lot of reports about Trump and Hitler, some weird fascination stuff. And again, to me, Donald Trump is nowhere in any way close to Donald Trump. Okay, don't even start there for me. I know some people think that. No, not close for me in any way. On who it influences, you're right. The hardcore Democrats or the hardcore MAGA folks, they're not going to move. I still think the one group that's interesting to watch, Tom, the Nikki Haley voters, right? Because Nikki Haley was getting, even after she stepped away in some states, 15-20%. Can you get enough of those Republicans who say, you know, on political philosophy, I'm significantly, not slightly, significantly closer to Donald Trump, but I abhor him as a person? I think those folks are interesting. I think in the end, is it 85? Is it 90? Is it 95% who still will vote for a Republican? In this case, it's Donald Trump. But if it's a smaller amount, I think it is curious to see if they would just not vote, or would they potentially vote for Harris?
Yeah, and just don't forget that when people go into the voting booth, they're not thinking about Hitler. They're thinking about, what's the cost of eggs? What is my grocery bill like? What is the cost of everything? And, you know, James Carville famously said it'll be on his tombstone someday. It's the economy, stupid. Lately, he's modified that to say, in some way, it's Trump, stupid. So he's trying to walk away from that a little bit. But still, I think most people vote, even though stock market's doing great. A lot of our 401ks are doing great. You got to remember, not everybody's in that same boat. There's a lot of people who can barely afford to pay rent or put food on the table or buy a house as a first-time home buyer. Those voters are going to vote the economy.
This is Tom Hauser. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Royce White, Amy Klobuchar, including the debate coming up here on WCCO Radio this Sunday. Back with Hauser in moments on CCO. All right, this Sunday, Blois Olson will moderate a debate between Amy Klobuchar and Royce White for the Senate seat. I think this is going to be a passionate discussion where I don't think there's going to be a lot of agreement. So it's a special Minnesota Votes edition of Sunday Take. It's at 9 at Limited Commercial Breaks presented by the Minnesota Credit Unions and AARP. Okay, so this is the first one, and I will be listening. You are normally in charge of just before Election Day. It's normally on a Sunday, right, where you'll have a number of debates. Where are you at? Because this isn't too far away from trying to line up a White Klobuchar debate for TV. I mean, you're also employee here, right? So you're multimedia. Will this be the only one here on CCO, or do you have one lined up also on TV?
We do not have one lined up on TV between Royce White and Amy Klobuchar. You may recall a couple months ago, you and I had a conversation on the radio about Royce White secretly recording conversations with me and my news director, and then putting them on his podcast. And we found that to be fairly dishonorable. We still cover his race. He hasn't really been doing much. But we haven't been doing as many debates this cycle because, frankly, there are so few competitive races. And as you may recall, 2 years ago, we had a hard time. We couldn't get Governor Walz to agree to do a debate.
Exactly.
It's like people, all of a sudden, the candidates have decided a Rose Garden strategy is better and they're not doing debates. So we will cede this particular territory to WCCO Radio and Blois. I will listen to it. I'm sure it'll be fascinating. But that race, you know, our polling shows she's got about a 15-point lead, which is a small lead for her. She's never won by less than 20. But I think this year, because we are so polarized, she'll probably win by somewhere between 15 and 20, just based on history and current polling.
Okay, outside of what he's doing on Twitter, and what he's doing on Twitter is he's following the Steve Bannon path. He loves Steve Bannon. He spends a lot of time talking about national politics. If anybody offers up criticism, it's tasteless comebacks from him. Is he doing any traditional, you know, get out the vote, metro area, greater Minnesota? What is he doing? And again, it's not like everybody has to do the same thing, but some of those things you do have to do. Is he doing any of that?
You know, he's got signs up that say the people are coming, and oddly, many of them, his name is in very small letters. So you don't know which people are coming. Generally, the idea is you put the candidate's name up in big block letters, so you reinforce that you're running for office. So he's been doing that. I do get frequent text messages from his campaign about tailgate parties they've done at Gopher games and get out the vote events they've done. I think they've done, you know, door knocking and that kind of thing. But I've seen no television ads. I haven't seen any social media ads. He doesn't have really almost any money to speak of, especially compared to Amy Klobuchar, who I forget how many millions she has. So, no, it's been a very non-traditional campaign, to put it lightly.
All right, Klobuchar, I'm with you. If she wins, and the chances are overwhelming, she's going to win. I mean, the Jesse upset would be nothing compared to this one with polling. But outside of just the divide,
if he were to win, that would mean Donald Trump won Minnesota by 15 points.
Easy, yeah,
that's
exactly
the type of thing we would need to have happen, and that's not happening.
Yeah. I see no scenario where he's going to win. Right. Certainly, our state is more divided seemingly by the day. But are there certain areas where you think she's more vulnerable? Positions. Or is she still basically the same candidate and the same senator she has been ever since she won election, what would it be, 2006?
Yeah, she's pretty much the same. You know, she's generally more of a moderate Democrat. I mean, she's been known to work across the aisle when needed, similar to what Angie Craig has done in the second district. I think her biggest challenge, if she were facing a more formidable, better-funded, well-known Republican, might be voter fatigue, you know, going for her fourth term in office. That's happened mm-hmm. very few times in Minnesota history. And she may have faced just some voter fatigue that may have been the biggest issue. But otherwise, she's not very polarizing. And so I think that's why she's always been in pretty good shape.
Regarding prominent Republicans, let's say either Harris and Walz win, or Walz decides he's not going to run in 2026. So the lieutenant governor certainly would be the favorite for the Democrats. Are there prominent Republicans right now where observers like yourself or other Republicans say, we have a couple stars? Like, we have individuals who really could emerge because, you know, did something just the other day at the WCCO radio event with Tim Pawlenty, and he's going to join us the day after the election. He'll probably join us the night of the election. Pawlenty's point is, and he's still a conservative, but his point, Tom, is the brand has to change, right? Scott Jensen lost decisively. Jeff Johnson twice lost decisively. Right now, Royce White is way behind. Is it the state or the candidates? Because I don't believe it's the state, because we have the Senate and House as close as they are.
Yeah, it's. I think your initial question was, do they have a bench? Do they have somebody in the wings who could run for governor? I'm sure you've heard. It seems like Scott Jensen might be preparing the ground for another run. I don't know that specifically. I've not talked to him about it, but I've read that. One person that I hear and see people point to is Senator Julia Coleman, you know, in the state Senate, who represents what is it, the Waconia area. She's a very articulate female candidate, and Republicans are doing horribly among suburban females. And people have pointed to her as a possible future candidate for some higher office, whether that's governor or something else. That's just one that comes to mind that people often point to.
Among the texts here, Pete from Roseville. Tom Hauser is a rock star. I majored in journalism at St. Thomas. I'm very proud of his many accomplishments. I mean, the cult of St. Thomas knows no end, and you're right in the middle of it. You might be the leader of the St. Thomas cult.
Well, I do wear an inordinate amount of purple. But, you know, that could be for the Vikings. That could be, you know, for St. Thomas. Well, that's very kind of him to say. I don't know about the rock star part, but, you know, I do my best. I try to be objective. I try, you know, Father Whalen, who was the journalism chairman back then, drilled that into our heads that people, Hauser, people don't care what you think. They care what the people you're interviewing think. And that's the way I've always tried to do my job.
He must be really disappointed in you. I mean, he must think, you know. Well, where did I go wrong?
he's up in the great beyond.
Yes.
I'm sure critiquing my work on a daily basis.
All right, my friend. Drive safe. I'll talk to you soon.
We'll have beers after the election, Chad. How about that? It should be over like about 25 days from now.
Yeah. Well, I'll be on CCO. You'll be on 5 and 45. Maybe we'll have a beer at like 4 o'clock when we're both off the air. That might be what we
do. You know, it won't be decided for days after the election. That much I think we do know. All right, Chad. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Tom Hauser, right here on Newstalk 830 WCCO.